literally almost the entire lunch that I just walked out of was all focused on what is the legislative solution.
Republicans are divided over immigration policy unfolding along the border. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 19th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, Governor Walker wants pre-existing medical conditions protected under the law.
And I think that's why I accepted the Medicaid expansion. It has brought coverage to over 40,000 Alaskans.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity, educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare volunteer, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska's seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The separation of families detained at the southern border is dividing Republicans as they try to keep the scenes of despair from becoming a GOP public relations disaster. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on the positions taken by Alaska's two senators.
Almost everyone, including President Trump, agrees it's bad to separate children from their parents. But that's what's happened to thousands of children as a result of the administration's zero-tolerance policy for unauthorized border crossers. Senator Lisa Murkowski is one of a dozen Republicans who has signed a letter asking the Attorney General to halt implementation of the zero-tolerance policy while Congress works out a solution. The letter was spearheaded by Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, and it calls the forced separations inhumane. But Trump and other Republicans say Congress needs to pass a law to end it. And Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan says that was the direction Senate Republicans took in their weekly policy gathering.
Literally, almost the entire lunch that I just walked out of was all focused on what is the legislative solution.
Sullivan says families should be kept together.
But you also have to address this other issue, which is related. It's the catch and release policy.
That's where people claiming asylum are given court dates and released from federal detention. Asked if the president should end family separations immediately, Sullivan said if there's a way to move up the processing of families so their cases can be heard within 20 days, the administration should consider doing that. Sullivan said he's interested in a bill by Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. It would authorize new temporary family shelters and double the number of immigration judges to about 750 so that cases could be heard quickly. But President Trump seems to reject the idea of hiring more immigration judges, at least not on a massive scale.
One of them says we want to hire 5,000 more judges. I don't want judges. I want border security. I don't want to try people. I don't want people coming in.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell emerged from the weekly policy lunch saying he wants to pass a targeted bill within days that would keep families together. But that would mean leaving out the trickier issues like an immigration overhaul and the president's proposed border wall. And it's not clear that's a solution the president will accept. All 49 Senate Democrats are backing a narrow bill that would prohibit removing children unless they're being abused or trafficked. Meanwhile, Republicans in the House are drafting two separate bills that address broader immigration policy. One put forth by the party's hardliners, the other a compromise bill aimed at moderates. It's not clear either has the votes to pass. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Federal prosecutors say they will seek the death penalty for a Palmer man accused in a drug-related double homicide in 2016. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage says it's only the third time in the past 25 years that a formal intent to pursue the death penalty has been filed in an Alaska case. According to the indictment against him, 32-year-old John Paul Smith II committed several drug robberies that culminated in the fatal shootings of Wasilla residents Ben Gross and Crystal DeNardi in June of 2016. 2016. Prosecutors say Alaska State Troopers found Gross and DiNardi dead in a burning home, along with another injured man. Smith was a suspect from the beginning and was arrested after 2 weeks of intense surveillance. Prosecutors announced today that if Smith is convicted, they'll seek the death penalty. That's a formal declaration made by U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions following a review by Department of Justice officials in Washington, D.C. The last Alaska case in which the Department of Justice sought the death penalty was in 2008 against Joshua Wade, who ultimately admitted to two murders in a deal that allowed him to avoid execution. The U.S. Attorney's Office says the only other Alaska case in modern memory seeking the death penalty was in the 1990s. Capital punishment is not an option under the state's judicial system, and the last time someone was legally executed for a crime in Alaska was prior to statehood. Americans with pre-existing medical conditions are protected under the current federal law in buying individual health insurance. But President Donald Trump's administration says the protection included in the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. Alaska Governor Bill Walker joined a bipartisan group of eight other governors in support of continuing the protection. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman talked with Walker about why he staked out the position.
Governor Walker, an independent, has been working with the governor's group over the past year on health care issues. The Trump administration said on June 7th that it wouldn't defend protections for people who have pre-existing medical conditions. On Monday, the group called on the administration to work with the states and Congress on a solution.
When we see that this is not being defended by the administration, it's appropriate for us to comment and express our desire that this be taken seriously.
Before the Affordable Care Act, insurers could charge more from or deny coverage to people who were already sick. The law stopped that. It required all Americans to buy insurance. That's because there was a danger of having those who were likely to need medical care disproportionately buy insurance. Congress eliminated a tax penalty for not being insured in a law passed last year. Texas and 19 other states sued to eliminate other provisions of the ACA, including the protection for those with pre-existing conditions. The Federal Justice Department decided against defending that provision. If the courts agree to eliminate it, Walker says he'd be concerned about the effect on Alaskans. The governor linked his position with his broader support for expanding access to medical coverage.
There are folks who will be without coverage, and I think that's why I accepted the Medicaid expansion. It has brought coverage to over 40,000 Alaskans.
The bipartisan governor's group was last in the news in February when it called on Congress and the administration to work on a health care solution that crosses party lines. They issued a blueprint that called for market stability, innovation, and competition. Walker says the group has gotten attention in Washington, D.C.
The Congress and the administration were both very appreciative of the efforts that we put forth to bring the governor together on a bipartisan basis. At the end of the day, the governors have to deal with the health care issue, so we said, let us be at the table.
The bipartisan governor's statement says everyone in the country deserves access to affordable, quality health insurance. The governors say the administration's decision to no longer defend the provision protecting those with pre-existing conditions is, quote, disappointing, end quote, and adds uncertainty and higher costs. The governors ask the administration to reverse its decision. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Since last week, seafood companies have been waiting to find out whether secondary processing of Alaska fish will be subject to a new 25% tariff, which China announced Friday in retaliation to American tariffs on Chinese goods. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute says, as far as they can tell, the answer is no.
Our information from our office in China and from our trade partners in China is that this new 25% tariff will not be applied to seafood that is processed in China for re-exports.
That is Alexa Tonkovich, executive director of ASMI. She adds that the logistics of how these tariffs will be applied are still being worked out, and ASMI is monitoring the situation as it evolves. Alaska seafood processors often head and gut fish, then send them to China for secondary processing, and it's then exported to other countries from there. Kodiak processors have told radio station KMXT that they have product in China, on the way to China, and product loaded into frozen containers that they've been holding in Kodiak that they want to send to China for eventual reprocessing. A delegation from China is scheduled to visit Alaska this July. ASMI will host the group, which plans to tour fish processing plants in Kodiak and Larsen Bay. The visit comes on the heels of Governor Bill Walker's trade mission to the country. China is the largest export market for Alaska seafood and a major reprocessing location. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a financial reward in a case of a stolen mammoth tusk.
It was on display, really kind of a neat piece, an amazing part of Alaska's natural history. You know, these animals that used to roam the earth during the last ice age.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Companies drilling oil and gas wells in Alaska will now have to dig deep enough to avoid problems stemming from thawing permafrost. Alaska's Oil and Gas Conservation Commission announced a regulation change on Tuesday that requires companies to set surface casing for wells below the base of the permafrost. The casing is basically a pipe that can provide structural strength to the well. The change comes after a BP well failed last year, causing it to leak oil and gas on the North Slope. The company blamed the spill on a piece of the casing that buckled after thawing permafrost put uneven pressure on it. After that leak and the revelation that the company had five other wells with similar designs in operation, state regulators called for a review of thousands of wells on the North Slope. Companies finished that review this January. They didn't find any well designs that could lead to a similar accident. Kathy Forster sits on the Conservation Commission. She says BP has already shut in the wells that have the flawed design, so she doesn't think companies operating in Alaska will have to spend any money to comply with the new regulations.
Nobody's going to do anything any differently than they're already doing it. The regulation change was put in there for the new guys. When you come up here, if you're going to drill a well, you have to drill it this way. The people who have been up here have learned that, and they're doing it. But welcome to Alaska. Set it below the permafrost.
The new regulation will go into effect on July 18th. Ratepayers in Juneau can expect a rebate on their power bills. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports state regulators have until mid-July to approve the retroactive rate cut.
Congress's corporate tax cut will save Alaska Electric Light and Power about $2.4 million in federal income taxes this year. Juneau's current electricity rates were calculated using the old higher tax rate, and state lawyers wanted it adjusted.
Our electric rates are determined by the cost to provide power to our communities.
Debbie Driscoll is AEL&P's spokeswoman. When costs rise, she explained, the power company applies to state regulators for permission to raise rates accordingly.
So likewise, if we have a significant decrease in our costs, then that gets passed through to customers.
Beginning August 1st, electricity rates will fall by 6.73%. That's following an agreement reached by AEL&P and state lawyers. Regulators approved the agreement Monday. The cut will be retroactive. That means ratepayers should receive a rebate for power purchased between January and the end of July. The company says households using an average of 750 kilowatt hours per month can expect about $45 back in rebates. The last increase was in 2016, when rates went up nearly 4%. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Track Palin has formally entered into a diversion court program after assaulting his father so severely that it left him bleeding from the head. Palin was accepted into Veterans Court after pleading guilty Tuesday to a reduced charge of criminal trespassing, which is a misdemeanor. If he completes the Veterans Court program, he'll serve 10 days in jail. If he doesn't complete it, he'll serve 1 year. Palin is the son of 2008 Republican vice presidential candidate and former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. He was initially charged with felony burglary and misdemeanor assault and criminal mischief. He and his father, Todd Palin, argued over a truck, and that escalated into a physical confrontation. Sarah Palin told authorities her son was on some type of medication and, quote, freaking out. The Alaska Supreme Court will have a new Chief Justice starting on July 1st. The state court system says Justice Joel Bolger was unanimously selected by members of the High Court to serve as Chief Justice for a 3-year term. The position is currently held by Justice Craig Stowers. The Chief Justice is the administrative leader of the state's judicial branch, presiding over Supreme Court arguments and appointing presiding judges for state judicial districts. In a release today, the court system says the justice may serve more than one 3-year term as Chief Justice, but cannot serve a consecutive term in that position. Bolger has worked as an attorney across Alaska during his career, including Dillingham, Kodiak, Utqiagvik, and Valdez. He was first appointed to the Alaska Supreme Court in 2013. How you fish on the Kuskokwim River depends on where you are. And according to local fishermen, how you fish near Upper and Lower Kalskag is unlike anywhere else along the river. Fishermen in these communities claim that their unique situation requires unique fishing regulations. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports that Kalskag fishermen are meeting with tribal, federal, and state managers today to negotiate a solution.
Mike Savage has been fishing in the same eddy on the Kuskokwim River since 1959. Savage lives in Lower Kalskag and began fishing this eddy as a child. Over 6 decades, he's learned to read it well.
Every year it changes, you know, you gotta look at it.
But this year, he can hardly see it. The river water is about 2 feet above average and nearly swallows his fishing spot.
It's hardly an eddy now because of high water.
An eddy is where the current hits something solid like rocks or the bank and flows back on itself, creating a whirlpool. Fish congregate in the swirling water, making them ideal fishing areas. But when the water is high, the river just flows over what was previously a barrier. Around Upper and Lower Kalskag, there aren't many eddies to begin with. And this year, they're smaller than usual because of high water rushing over them. Some eddies nearly disappeared after high water during breakup tore off sections of riverbank. This means the two communities that make up the Kalskag section of the Kuskokwim have a lot of fishermen and not a lot of places to fish. So fishermen take turns drifting.
There are 3-4 boats. It'll be maybe about an hour, hour and a half before we make another drift.
There's another limiting factor, timber. Trees line this section of the Kuskokwim and fill the river, snagging and tearing nets. Savage says his brother-in-law had to cut a new 6-inch mesh gill net during a recent opening to free it from a snag.
And then we spent about maybe 2 hours trying, an hour trying to mend it.
That's time not spent fishing during an opening that only lasted 12 hours. High water means more timber flowing into the river. That's less places to fish and more snags. On top of that, there are no non-spawning salmon tributaries near Kalskag where fishermen can drift net outside the main river. So when gillnet openings occur, all the Kalskag fishermen are taking turns drifting their nets in the same few eddies and stopping often to ensnag and mend them. By the time the fishing period closes, no one has had time to do much fishing. Mike Savage wants to change that by extending the openings to 24 hours for the Kalskag area. Savage represents the Middle River on the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, and this afternoon, he and other Kalskag representatives are meeting with the managers from the tribal, federal, and state entities in hopes of coming up with a solution. Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge manager Ken Stahlnecker oversees the Kalskag federal waters. Stahlnecker announced last week that he's willing to work with the Kalskag communities and can change the rules through a federal emergency order. This is not the first time Kalskag has had special rules. In 2016, the feds made an exemption to include Kalskag under state regulation. Kalskag lies less than 50 miles downstream of the refuge boundary on the federal side, but the community's fishing style and circumstance more closely match the upper river on the state side. Including Kalskag under state regulation for the remaining season is another option Savage wants considered. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
The Campbell Creek Science Center announced today that it is offering a $500 reward to anyone with information about a missing 100-pound mammoth tusk. As Alaska Public Media's Aaron McKinstry reports, authorities have been on the hunt for it since it was stolen from the center in March.
A line of kids follows their camp counselor down a path outside the Campbell Creek Science Center. They're part of a summer camp at the center that teaches kids about the outdoors and wildlife. But spokesperson Maureen Clark says this summer's campers are missing out on a hefty piece of Alaska.
It was in this area, kind of in the corner. It was about 5 feet long and 100 pounds, and this was kind of a good place to keep it, and people could come up and touch it, and that's where it was.
The 10,000-year-old mammoth tusk that used to sit on top of a counter has now been replaced by two blue plastic bins. Kids and counselors mill about grabbing backpacks as they head outside. One asks what we're looking at.
Mammoth tusk,
yeah.
Clark works for the Anchorage District Office of the Bureau of Land Management, which owns the Campbell Creek Science Center. Because the investigation is ongoing, she can't share much about the theft, but says someone stole the tusk in the early morning of March 8th. Police and BLM investigators responded that day.
It's important not to release too much information too early in the investigation. Otherwise, you could risk losing important evidence and suspects. And so at this point in time, it was a good time to go to the public and ask for help.
She says the tusk was one of several found on BLM land in the Colville River area up on the North Slope in the 1980s. The tusk was polished, restored, and put on display. It's curved and brown and off-white in color.
It was on display, really kind of a neat piece, an amazing part of Alaska's natural history. You know, these animals that used to roam the earth during the last ice age left behind their tusks, and it was pretty cool to have one here. It was popular with the kids and with the public.
Clark says there's a legal and illegal market for ivory, as well as paleontological resources like the tusk. Nothing else was stolen at the time of the burglary. In Anchorage, I'm Mary McKinstry.
Small luxury cruises in Southeast Alaska offer guests a chance to explore remote spots in the Tongass National Forest. Passengers get a front row seat to look for wildlife. But there's another kind of tourism happening at the same time, big game hunting. And that can be a problem when the two interests overlap. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of two seemingly different groups trying to find a solution.
The Safari Endeavor was designed to give guests the experience of adventure with the comfort of sleeping in high-end sheets. On this ship, you can wake up to locally sourced food and spend the afternoon paddling to a distant cove. Those perks are available to a small passenger list of up to 70 people.
So this is kind of the sun deck.
CEO and owner of UnCruise Adventures, Captain Dan Blanchard, shows me a favorite spot on the boat to take in the scenery or roll out a yoga mat.
So if I were a passenger, is this where I could potentially spot a brown bear from the deck?
It certainly is, and it's something that happens regularly, brown or black bears.
So I could do downward facing dog and then get up and see a bear.
Yeah, we might call it downward facing bear.
And that's a big part of what Blanchard says UnCruise is all about, being able to view wildlife in this pristine environment.
Most of us that spend time out in Southeast realize that Southeast Alaska is a bastion for wilderness, not just for Alaska, but for our world.
The trips have become so popular, the company has even made a push for an earlier start season. Of course, this Safari Endeavor is a hunt for the eyes. But last year, on a different UnCruise boat, the hunt became real. As guests peered through binoculars at a bear, they saw a hunter shoot it.
My reaction was, it's bound to happen.
Thor Stacy has been a hunting guide in Alaska for decades. To be clear, it was a local hunter, not a guide who shot the bear as a boat of surprised tourists watched. Stacy says generally nobody, including hunters, want to see that happen. Still, he thinks as more small cruises expand to the spring and fall, that conflict seems inevitable. That's traditionally the bear hunting season, a time when as many as 20 guides lead clients around the region. He says that's led to frustrations for both small cruises and hunting guides alike. He's heard the complaint.
There's all this country out there. Why can't we just, you know, go where we want in the spring? And we're saying, look, we're already here. We have really important businesses for small communities in Alaskans, and our use has been here since the 1930s.
The Tongass is huge, but small cruises and big game guides can't just go anywhere. They have to obtain special use permits from the U.S. Forest Service. And that becomes a problem when the two ventures overlap. For bear hunters, the scent of an entire boat of people can throw off the animal's behavior. Stacy says hunting guides attracted some of the original adventure tourists to the region. As the small cruise industry expands, he says the game guides are the ones who feel threatened.
In America, the bigger you are, the better things generally work out for you. So when you see a large economic interest like that show up, and you're a group of small businesses, the fear of being pushed out or pushed aside is very intense.
Add to that, Stacy says, the misconceptions people have about big game hunting. He stresses this is a regulated industry. He's concerned about the sustainability of the bear population and keeping the Tongass wild just as much as anyone else. So after word got out about the bear shooting by the local hunter, Stacy says it was time for a conversation with the small ships.
We figured if we helped him out, the outcome would likely be much better.
We began to understand about what it means to harvest a bear and how that is controlled.
Dan Blanchard from UnCruise again.
And that, quite frankly, brought more, even though I'm not a bear hunter, it put me at more comfort.
In January, the two groups got together in meetings moderated by the Forest Service to hatch a plan. Hunting guides shared their knowledge and made suggestions on alternative spots for the small cruise ships to explore. There's now a voluntary schedule where the businesses can keep tabs on each other to avoid being at the same place at the same time. Blanchard acknowledges this new agreement so far has been a challenge.
It's not a lot of places, and probably when we go back, we'll need to try to charter some new spots for the small ships next spring.
But Blanchard thinks there's still room for different types of tourism to coexist in the Tongass. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Daisha Eaton in Kodiak, Rasha McChesney, Jacob Resnick, Andrew Kitchenman, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Casey Grove and Aaron McKinstry in Anchorage, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.